Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, and Gwyn Sheltimer. Gwyn, I know that you work in Toronto and have to spend part of your week there. When do you find time to write? Can you manage it every day?
Well, I only have to be in the city for 2 days of the week, and I'm very lucky to be able to be at home for the other five. And as a practice, what I've done, I do write every day. I have what I call my morning pages, which might just be journaling or I might do something creative. But I do try and write every day. And then in addition to that, I've set aside a day a week to be creative, which could be anything from writing my stories or poems to painting, which I have got back into.
You've won many prizes for your short fiction, and I believe the story you're going to read today is set in Africa. Why did you write this story?
It is indeed set in Africa, and I come from Africa. I come from Zimbabwe. I spent many years. I won't admit to how many. But I was there during the time of the Zimbabwe Civil War, and one of the recurring dreams I used to have, call it a recurring nightmare, if you like, was what would I do if I was alone at home with my children who were very young and we were attacked? As it happens, we never were, so I never had to actually find out. But the story plays with that idea.
So what's the story called?
It's called Remember Three.
Remember Three. One, two, three. I've got to remember three. Please, God, please help me remember three. The gun is cold beneath the pillow, the empty pillow at the head of the space beside me. Dan has been gone on military call-up for 4 weeks now. No communication, no idea where he is. Yet I feel where he is, out there, out in the bush, in the dust, in the heat, treading carefully around newly turned soil, around the landmines buried there, ever watching for movement in the tall grass, straining to hear a sound out of place, breathing the dust, trying to smell men. Tonight, outside, the darkness swirls in smouldering eddies around the house. Cobweb mists hang from the eucalyptus trees, their veiled lenses turning the red hibiscus flowers to blood. There's no sound, no dogs baying on this moonless night, no frogs, no cicadas, no jealous cats. The air is heavy with silence. My breathing fills my ears. My heartbeat crescendos in my brain. I run my tongue over my teeth. It's the smell of metal that puts them on edge, the cold, dead metal of this piece in my hand. I prefer the .38 revolver, but it takes too long to load, so I have this one, a .22 Beretta, small enough to cradle in my palm, 8 in the mag and 1 up the spout. A single snap, pull back, release, and I'm no longer alone. It's not that I'm the only one in the house. Tyler and Emma are asleep in the tiny room down the hall. It's not really a bedroom, but it's the safest room in the house. There's just one small window, meshed against grenades, and bedding on the floor below window height. The fort, the children call it. Slowly, silently, I slide from the sheets. My warm feet tread lightly on the hardwood floors, weaving their way past creaks, like a child avoiding cracks in the pavement. Reaching the open window, I peer into the void. I know they are out there. I feel their presence in the blackness, violating my space. I curse the silence now, just as minutes earlier I had cursed the noise that woke me. Deafening squeals of wounded dogs, the gnash of teeth and cries of men, and frightened whimpers dying on the wind. But there is only silence now, beating at my eardrums, driving me mad. I listen for the snap of twigs or boots on gravel, but the lawn is thick outside this window, the soil rich and soft. The ground will not give up its secrets tonight. A groping wind gust tugs at my nightdress, and my heart leaps. Carefully I mop the cold sweat beads from my lip, my eyes riveted all the while on the blackness. Shivering despite the heat, my eyes strain to grow accustomed to the night, and I breathe quietly through my mouth, lest the sound give me away. Is this how the others felt? How long did they wait in the darkness before darts of fire crossed the threshold, before they screamed at men in doorways, men with bayonets who kicked and ripped whatever, whoever, lay in their path? Dogs, children, grandmothers? Did the others feel what I feel now, before they screamed at camouflage shapes who bound their hands, raped them, and bludgeoned them to death? Is it better to die now, better to die quickly before the pain, better to die before they leave their calling card, a baby impaled on the gatepost? Like a cat, my eyes begin to filter the murky shadows, and I see him. I clasp the Beretta in both hands, arms straight, shoulder height. No emotions now, no room for emotions. Hold steady, feet planted square. And as he emerges from the night, I fire and hear him slump against the sill at my waist. The night explodes in fury. I hear voices shouting, "Fire, fire! Bulala Zonki, kill them all!" And I fire again at a passing shape. Another form, and again I fire. Oh God, the children! I hear men banging on the front door, shattering the glass panes beside it. I turn to run, but through the window an arm jerks me back by the throat. Wildly I fire over my shoulder. Crack, crack! Four left now, only four. I don't look back. I have no desire to see the faceless form of my attacker as he falls heavily, his body sliding down my own as I pull away. Regaining my balance and ignoring the bloody gurgles behind me, I head down the hallway. I strain to hear Emma and Tyler asleep in Innocent's cradle. The noise of the dogs won't wake them, nor the sounds of men. They are conditioned now. They sleep behind the false security of locked doors, meshed windows, and a mother with a gun. If you wish to frighten these children, don't bother with tales of dragons and ogres. Shout, "Down!" And like Pavlov's dogs, they hit the floor, face down, arms overhead, thinking their childish thoughts, but never looking up. We taught them that in the early days when the convoys first began. We joined the convoys to escape for at least a few days, over the border to a country not at war. It was a 3-hour drive, and the convoy left at first light. Before we left, they drilled us. How to stop, how to evacuate the car, how to crouch in the bush, how and when to fire. This was no game, and the children understood. Down was their cue. Face down, arms overhead, never look up. Till you're told. When the convoy moved out, it was a 12-mile snake of vehicles, moving at constant speed, 4 car lengths apart, no passing allowed. At the head and tail, and 2 more in between, rode the army escort. Overhead, a spotter plane droned in ever-constant figures of 8. No idle chatter or happy songs on that ride. Silence, vigilance, and for the children, unquestioning obedience. Like other families, Dan drove and I rode shotgun. When the border loomed in sight, we were drained. But once over the border, the party began. How we needed that respite from the call-ups and lonely nights, from the daily honor roll and listening to kindergarten children discussing landmines. Here at home, it was only once that Tyler woke. A glorious night of tropical storms, the sky a flashing neon sign, the wind calling in minor keys to the world. That night, a sudden burst of hail pummeled the corrugated iron roof, and I ran to gather a screaming child in my arms, a child convinced that we were under fire. Reeling now against the wall of the passageway, I struggle to reach the children. In wild moments of trauma, the world seems to move in slow motion, but the mind races. In precious seconds, it processes whole minutes of awareness. In these seconds, I imagine Dan's face when they tell him his family is dead. I've seen that face before. I remember the day they came to the nursery school to find Denise. Rob had been inspected home that afternoon, his 6-week call-up over for a while. The truck on its way from the base to the city had hit a bus. The authorities had tried to reach her at home, but she was out getting her hair done for his homecoming. Happening so close to town, the news of the crash was disseminated within hours. We drove to the school to pick up our children, knowing that one of their number had no father, and that tomorrow that child could be ours. I remember how Denise's cheery face turned grey, how she sobbed and sank to her knees in the school driveway before they even uttered a word. But suddenly another form is in the passageway, his black face shining in the gloom. He's between me and my children. There is no thought in my head, no hesitation. I'm on automatic pilot. I swing the gun at his head and fire. Down he goes, the roar making my ears ring, but I'm clambering past him through the kill zone with the smell of death in my nostrils. Only 3 now. I've remembered to save 3. Thank you, God. 3 bullets left. 1 for each of my children, and one for me. Then I feel it. My leg is on fire with pain, and I feel the floor come up to meet me. Over my shoulder I see the glint of his weapon, and I have no choice. Oblivious to everything but my target, I fire again. He's almost dead, but he won't die. I fire one more time, and he is still. I drag myself into the children's room, bolt the door behind me. I can hear the others coming down the corridor. Before me the children sit clutching each other, their eyes wide with horror. I look down at my gun and realize I have only one bullet left.
Thank you, Gwen. That was really interesting. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in today. We hope you'll join us every week at this time to meet other writers in the region. Our guests in coming weeks write everything from mysteries and thrillers to children's books, from biographies to travel, from poetry to plays, and so much more.
And if you're listening and you are an author or you would like to be interviewed, or you know someone who would like to participate, please write to us at wordonthehills@gmail.com. And if you would like to read a sampling by some of the authors who will be interviewed on future programs, you can find a copy of Hill Spirits, our 2012 anthology. It's available at the Avid Reader in Coburg and Lighthouse Books in Brighton. So thanks once again for joining me, Gwen Sheltmer, and my co-host Felicity Sidnell Reed today on Word on the Hills. We hope you join us next week at this time on 89.7 Northumberland Radio.